Hi, this is Brian Robertson, the founder of Holacracy, and you're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host again. It's Jay Hersko. Joined with me, as you can tell by the bumper, is Brian Robertson, who is the creator of Holacracy. We are actually going to have a discussion about what else but Holacracy. Brian, thank you for joining. So in case someone is living under a rock or they haven't heard of you, can you give us a quick introduction of you not a Holacracy yet? We'll get into that in a minute, but just a little bit of background about you and how you ended up here talking to me.
Yeah, so I'm an entrepreneur, but before that, I was a software developer. In fact, I actually started coding when I was about 6 years old. I learned to read on software development books. So I've been in the coding game for quite a long time. And about 20 years ago, I started my first software company. And I was a new CEO and entrepreneur at the time. And I just had this deep sense, there's got to be a better way to do this, to build a company. And this was the beginning of the Agile movement. And I wanted to take those principles and try to figure out how to instill them into every aspect of how we did business and more. And so I turned my software company into a laboratory and we experimented. And that's kind of, I'm a tinkerer, a hands-on entrepreneur. I get accused sometimes of being a management theorist or something. And I don't like that. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a builder. I'm a creator. I'm not a theory guy. I'm a practitioner.
Right, right. There's one thing. There is a space, especially in our world, for people who can sit in an office and just blather about, you know, academically, this is how you would do this. But the true test is, which we'll talk to shortly, when the rubber meets the road and you actually try to do it in real life, you know, because yes. People are messy. People, we are as species, we're just messy. Mm-hmm. So, Brian, if you had to explain Holacracy to someone as an elevator pitch, say you got into an elevator and one of our random listeners just hopped in next to you and they said, oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm creative Holacracy. Well, what is that? How do you answer that question?
Yeah, so Holacracy is a framework for organizing a company, a framework for breaking down work and figuring out who's doing what do we expect of each other, where are the boundaries of our authority and where's our power within that, right? So it's basically the same things that we look to a management hierarchy to do. Holacracy is just an alternative. It's an alternative to the management hierarchy for breaking down work, structuring and organizing efforts.
And so many people are familiar with the other idea of a sociocracy, right? That's also had its day in the sun. So if someone was curious, Brian, what's the difference between the two?
Yeah. So actually way early in the journey towards Holacracy, my software company actually adopted and used sociocracies. So quite familiar with that. And it was actually through using it that I realized it wasn't actually what I was looking for. Although there's a lot of positives I would say about it. Sociocracy is more of a wrapper for management hierarchy. Companies running with sociocracy still have a command hierarchy in place. They just have this policy setting function that kind of wraps around the management hierarchy and constrains the top-down executive function of the managers based on the group's kind of decisions. And Holacracy, on the other hand, is not a wrapper for management hierarchy. It's a complete replacement. It's a different way of breaking down structure. There is no command hierarchy once you've fully adopted this. That's the first major difference. The other major difference is sociocracy, in its policy setting function, uses what I call a variation on consensus. So they call it consent, but it's a variation on consensus in that it's a very personal thing. It's asking people personally, do you consent to this, right? Or do you have a problem with this? And Holacracy is not a system based on consensus. It's much more focused on the purpose of the work and the perspective in roles about getting the work done. So it's looking much more about what's in the way of you getting your work done, getting your purpose of your piece expressed, and less about personal opinions. So it's less subject to what I call the tyranny of consensus, which is where everyone has a voice, but right. No decisions can get made.
Right, right. Which is, I mean, I was just having a conversation with somebody earlier today where we talk about, you know, it was one of our interns who is, you know, she's doing a 9 months internship. And we were talking about like how to develop like business acumen, whatever. And I said, well, I can give you some cheats. And one of the cheats I can tell you is any meeting with more than three people gets nothing done.
Yep.
Because it real quickly turns into yes and conversations. It turns into everyone feels the need to speak because they want to feel like they're contributing. And yet at the end of the day, we've all been in those 60 minute, 12 person meetings where you walk out and you go, I don't know what the hell we just accomplished. I feel like I talked, but I don't feel like I said anything. So, and that was one of the, so I, you know, I've read Sociocracy. I actually picked up the book, rode my way through it. I'm like, okay, I think I get it. And you talked about how it's a flattening of an organization where there isn't, that isn't a wrap around a command structure. It's a rethinking of the command structure. So let's go into that, Brian. I'd like to go into it a little bit conceptually about how Holacracy works, as well as we can do it, only with audio and no whiteboards. But you introduced the concept of circles, which I thought was really, really fascinating. Ideas, things like super circles and sub circles. How would I unpack that to a listener who's trying to understand if they're used to the pyramid and now they're looking at what amounts to rings? How do they conceptualize that?
Yeah, so I want to bring roles into this as well. And I know we'll talk about them a little bit more afterwards, but to use a metaphor to start, look at how the human body is organized. It's one of my favorite examples of a different organizational structure from what we see in most companies. Nature does pretty well at organizing systems to respond and adapt to a very, very complex environment. The human body is a great example. There are trillions of cells working together collaboratively in alignment with each other, and yet there's no CEO cell telling the others what to do. There's no command hierarchy of cells. And partly the way nature does that is every cell has autonomy. Every cell has the freedom to self-organize, right? Within the boundary, the walls of that cell, it has its own processes that it controls to turn its inputs into its outputs, right? There's a self-organization autonomy at every cell, but you don't have cells that just ignore the broader system. When that happens, we call it cancer. It's generally destructive, right? Rather, all the cells still need to be in alignment with something broader. And so we have organs. And an organ's job is not to micromanage the cells. The organ doesn't poke in and try to structure the cells. It doesn't tell them what to do or how to organize. What it does is build on top of their autonomy, and it builds a larger function, a broader function, right? So the heart's job is not to boss around the muscle cells and nerve cells and blood cells, right? It's to integrate them, right? Build on top of their autonomy into a larger function and integrate at a different level of scale, right? So as far as Holacracy goes, that's the general paradigm that you can see in a company running with Holacracy. And the organs are like the circles, right? So you can roughly translate it to team in a conventional structure, but it really is a different concept. So every circle has autonomy. It has something that it controls. It has its own internal processes. Every circle, like every cell, has the freedom to self-organize, right? And within the circle, there's a whole bunch of roles, right? And those roles, also like cells, have autonomy and the freedom to self-organize. And some of those roles may themselves be circles containing yet more roles, right? This is a structure called a holarchy, where every level has autonomy and yet is part of a broader level that doesn't violate the autonomy, but integrates it into a larger function.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of, not to get you off, but it reminds me of, you know, listeners will remember, we're big fans of spiral dynamics here and Ken Wilber and his integral theory. And it's the idea of a holon, right? It's a whole part. Each piece is whole, but it's also a part of something bigger. Right. And the other part that comes into that, which I think we're going to get to in a couple of minutes, is the idea of equality, right? Your liver is no more less or important than your gallbladder, which is no more less or important than your heart, right? Yeah. They all need to be working in concert to keep me upright, right? To keep doing what I'm doing. And if one of them falls out of phase, that's where problems result.
And it's because every level in that system has autonomy and has kind of its own encapsulated complexity. Because of that, you and I can sit here on a podcast talking about how to organize companies instead of worrying about, wait, how do I get the oxygen to that muscle that needs it right now, right? But when I was a CEO in a management hierarchy, I often felt like the kind of problems I tackled were the equivalent of, how do I get that oxygen to that muscle right now?
Right. Very true.
I couldn't think at the high level because so much is lost when you don't have the right kind of encapsulated complexity and autonomy and self-organization. So Holacracy starts with, it's a role-based system. Every role has autonomy and self-organization within some scope. And yet the roles group together into circles, which group together into broader circles and so on, right? Every layer has autonomy and every layer has some functions to serve for the broader. So there's also an alignment there. There's accountability.
It's fractal. It's fractal and truly in the way that nature is fractal, right? Like, you know, I mean, Mandelbrot sequences and all that sort of stuff. You go up and you go down. It's the same thing, just magnified or extrapolated outwards. It all is, it's all smaller parts of a larger whole that are all not mirrors, but representative images of each other.
Yes. And so this is actually one of the ways I love thinking about holacracy. And I usually don't share this, but anyone in the software world is likely to appreciate this. I think you can think of holacracy as giving you a pattern language for how to describe the structure and function of an organization and a process for how to update and evolve that language. Right. So the language is a language of circles and roles. There are different fields on roles that have different meaning in the authority structure, mm-hmm. expectation structure. Right. So there's a structured language for how to describe an organization. And then there's a series of processes for how to update that structure, how to evolve it based on the real learning that we're happening. And that's a distributed process that happens in every team, not a top-down process.
And that's one of the things when I read through the book, I thought was most fascinating is a lot of times when you get to the management theory, like we were talking about, right? When you get to the whole, for lack of a better term, the agile industrial complex, right? Sometimes it turns into this voodoo chicken waiting, where you just, oh, well, you know, paint the mark on the floor, sacrifice a chicken, you know, when the third red moon, you'll get like, you know, good crops or whatever, or your organization will be successful in delivering business agility. But you have a very measured, thoughtful way of approaching it, where in the book you talk about the structure, but like you said, you also talk about the process by which you can say, okay, here's where I am today. And over here is where I want to be. These are the things I should start thinking about in order to get there. One of the things I thought was really fascinating, which I wanted to talk about before we go off circles, because we are going to cover circles and roles and domains, and that is the idea of a governance circle versus the idea of an operational circle. Because I thought this is one of the things, to be honest with you, Brian, that sort of clicked home with me. It's where holacracy started to make sense. That while it sounds like a germane differentiation, it's actually a very important differentiation.
Yeah. So every circle in holacracy has, we kind of think of these as two areas or spheres of function. There's operations and there's governance. And this is true in every circle in the organization. And another way of thinking about that, the difference is between working in the roles and the organization, the structure, and working on the roles and the structure. Mm-hmm. So operations is working in. This is what most people are familiar with. Every company has some way of executing, right? Some way of operating. So operations is a very familiar domain for most people. Governance is not. Governance is about stepping back from the operations to work on the process, work on the structure, right? And that tends to be less familiar. Even if you look in the Agile space, a lot of the Agile methods, they provide different processes and frameworks for the operations, right? If you take Scrum, for example, you get some starting roles, you get some starting processes, right? You've got a basic framework or structure to execute. But what you don't have, usually in most methods, at least in a very mature form, is any meta process to work on the rest of the process, right? What happens when you need to locally adapt how you do Scrum, right? You can figure out some way to do that, but there's no disciplined meta process for adapting the process. That's the realm of governance. It's where we're not talking about the specifics of what happened on the project last month or whatever, right? What we're looking at is at a meta level, right? And we're not going to make any decisions, but we're going to adapt the structure. So for example, my company, we do a lot of holacracy training, right? And among other things, that's one of our business lines. And so we have operational decisions to make, like, where do we do trainings? Or now do we start an online training? What's the design of our training? What slides do we use? How many people do we have? All these are operational decisions. With holacracy, those decisions tend to get made by a role that knows it's their job within clear bounds of where the limits of their decision-making are, right? That's not a decision made by a group or by consensus. It's somebody's job with clear expectations and clear limits to make these decisions. The space of governance is where we step back. We never decide in a governance meeting, which is a collective collaborative process. We never decide what city to open a training in, or you know, what slide should be, or how many people should be there. Never any of those things. What we do is decide who makes those decisions. So it's a meta level thing, or what's the process, or what are the limits, right? So we know, for example, we have a role that has the authority to choose the venue for our training. What hotel do we do it in? And that role has a limit on their authority. They have to choose one that meets the requirements of the trainer role, which is a different role. So governance is never saying choose this venue or here are the requirements. It's setting up the meta pattern to say the venue selector role has the freedom to decide this, and it's their job within the limits of they have to meet the criteria that the trainer role specifies.
It's very much a, it's almost an impetus for collaboration as opposed to someone blindly in an office somewhere making a random decision, thinking, okay, well, I know best, so this is the right thing to do. And then it turns out things go haywire. I mean, perfect example of corporate governance gone amok. One of my best IT friends, he works in a large organization where it got to the, they kept rolling out changes in the governance process for how to do an offsite event, how to get an offsite event funded, because Jay had one and he spent $8,000 and it went great. And then Brian had one and he spent $80,000, and there was also, and so these people started watching. So they kept lowering that floor to the point where literally to get a post-it in an offsite event, you had to like get 6 layers of signatures, and you know, and firstborn child sign them blood. So there is something to be said about setting and I think the key word you were talking about when you were talking about roles was expectations. Everyone walks in with a shared understanding of this is what I'm supposed to do. Which was one of the things when I got to the role section of the book, I was really fascinated because there's almost a choose your own adventure aspect to it, in the sense of, okay, take a step back and look, here's what I'm responsible for. Here's the things I'm going to do. Here's what I am going to commit myself going in to deliver, right? How many times, I mean, it's happened to me, you get a job as a scrum master, you get a job as a project manager, and you're walking in with a loaded context based upon where you've worked previously, and it's never completely explained to you, okay, walking in this role, this is what you need.
Yep.
Whereas in Holacracy, because it's flat and because it's concentric rings and circles, you have the ability to actually define that to set yourself up for success going forward.
Yeah. In fact, I heard from a colleague of mine that runs a fast growth startup, about 100 employees now with Holacracy, and they're growing quickly. And he said what was really remarkable to him is that he follows new people around to just get a sense of what's going on in his company as they grow. And he said he realized people on their first day of work can figure out exactly who to go to for any decision or any need anywhere in the organization reliably. And in most fast growth startup environments, it takes somebody a lot longer than their first day of work to figure out the lay of the land and who does what and who to expect what from, right? It's all completely transparent. There's a software tool called GlassFrog that holds all this clarity, and you can easily reference it and find it. So, and the other thing I want to add, what that clarity of expectations enables is a more autocratic environment. And this is fascinating. So Holacracy is both more collaborative and more autocratic than a traditional management hierarchy, right? And because when you have really clear roles with clear expectations and clear boundaries on their authority, it gives you the ability to say to people in those roles, you have the freedom and power to lead your role. Go be a CEO of your role. Don't defer to consensus. Don't call big meetings and try to get all the buy-in and try to get everyone else on board. Mm-hmm. Just go lead. And if someone else feels some tension about how you're leading, they'll go to the governance process and they're going to clarify some expectations on your role or some limits to your power, right? Because we have the meta process that allows you to clarify all this, it becomes safe to take a stand that says, when you're filling your role, as long as you're honoring the governance we've defined, go lead autocratically, right? Be informative, communicate, be transparent so others can know what's going on. And if they have tension, address it. But what you end up with is ironically a more autocratic environment than a management hierarchy, but just distributed. It's not a top-down autocratic environment.
Right. And when I was reading through the book with the first, it's no surprise that he references it in his work. When I was reading through your Holacracy book, one of the first things that popped in my mind was Frederick Laloux's work with reinventing organizations, right? Where he talks about how if you and I are on a team, we can make decisions, where we are empowered to make decisions. However, the two clauses for successful teal organizations, right, is they go to the expert first to get their opinion, not their buy-in, but their opinion. And they also speak to the people who will be impacted by the decision that they're making. So like the next chain down, which I think if even in a traditional hierarchical organization, if people just took a beat and said, when I pull this lever, what's going to happen around the corner, right? It's like database triggers. The best way I heard a database trigger described to me by a developer was, imagine you go home and throw a switch in your garage and my what's it called? It's the thing, my disposal, my kitchen sink disposal just starts going out automatically. That's how we describe database triggers. And we were having a conversation. He said, that's how a lot of organizations make decisions, where the person just comes home, Jay just comes home and throws a light switch. It doesn't realize that Brian's disposal is now going. There was a spoon in the sink. And now we're creating havoc, right? So there was a lot of, in my reading, and we've talked about Lulu's reinventing organizations, there is a lot of overlap in the emotional health and safety that comes with flattening an org and making everybody whole-ons comparatively to what Lou was trying to get at with his teal organizations.
Yeah, so Fred's a friend of mine and actually writes about Holacracy in his book as well. And I often get asked, what's the relationship? What I think Fred gives is, he writes about the paradigm. So his book is almost a prequel to mine in some ways. It's the broader category, the broader framing. Holacracy is a specific practice or framework or methodology for getting to teal. So my favorite quote about that comes from Tony Hsieh of Zappos, who said, teal is the goal, Holacracy is the way. Right? Holacracy is the only complete packaged system framework that allows you to express those principles or paradigm. It's a lot like the early days of the Agile movement, where you had these Agile principles, which is great, but it was really hard for companies just to look at the principles and then make a transformation. You needed a method, right? And that's where you got XP and Scrum and others that came in and provided a concrete methodology or framework that embodied the principles and helped people get there, when it was really hard to do that without that kind of
process. And I think Scrum has shown us, XP has shown us, SAFe has shown us that even when you do have a method, it's not necessarily successful. It's still that it comes down to the mental setup and the switch, right? The big switch. I did want to talk about another thing that I liked in Holacracy, which was very formal, was the idea of how meetings are run, right? I think you call it as tactical meeting structure, which, and like we were joking about earlier, anybody who's been in the meeting of a dozen people where you walk out an hour later and go, what the hell did we just talk about? You know, that can be quite painful. Can we talk a little bit about, I don't want to spoil the book, no spoilers here, because I want people to go out and dig in, because I think there's a lot of really good stuff here. How would you describe that to someone who's just listening?
Yeah, so there are two main meeting structures in Holacracy: the tactical meeting you mentioned, and then the governance meeting that I mentioned earlier. So the tactical meeting is for the realm of operations, how you get work done together. And the governance meeting is that pull back and work on the process in the organization. And each one is a pretty structured, disciplined kind of framework for how to run the meeting. What I love about the tactical meeting for operations, we're not using that to find group decisions. I think that's where so many meetings get so bogged down and so painful. And in a lot of companies, people default to group decisions when they don't have clarity of who should make this decision, within what limits and with what expectations. With Holacracy, you have that. You have the governance process that helps you get that clarity, which lets you take the stand again within operations, go lead your role. So the tactical meeting, you never have to use it. You never have to bring an issue to the meeting. You can always just go lead your role out of the meeting. It's there for your convenience, and it's there for making requests of others. So when an issue comes up in the tactical meeting, there's a few things that differentiate this from a traditional meeting and how you might handle it. The first is, we build the agenda on the fly in the meeting, and each agenda item represents one tension felt by one person. Most meetings, you build a list of agenda items and their topics to discuss. You go into the topic and anyone with attention around that topic all jumps in, and it becomes kind of a coliseum battle for the collective attention of the group.
You never get past the first bullet because everybody has to add their say. Yeah,
that's right. With Holacracy, it's really clear who owns the agenda item. It's whoever added it. And it's only for their attention. The entire point of that agenda item is to give that person space to make requests to help them with their attention. We're not solving anyone else's tension. And if the facilitator sees us going to anyone else's issue, they cut it off and invite that person to add their own agenda item. And we get back to the agenda item owner. And during the agenda item, what we do is simply turn to the agenda owner and say, what do you need? And then it's their space to make requests. So they might request an action from someone else, or a project, an outcome they want someone to work towards. Or they might want input from others, or they might want to just share something and have people hear them, right? These are all types of requests. So the goal in the tactical is to give them space for that. Notice what request are they making and give them space to check it out. So if they want to request an action from someone, great, turn to that person. Would it serve your role's purpose to work towards that action that's requested? Yes, great, action taken, move on, right? If they want input, great, you've got some time for brainstorming, let's do it. But we're not looking for consensus. We're looking for information for that agenda owner to be able to say, I got the input I need, I'm going to go lead my role now, thank you, right? So it stays so fast-paced. In fact, this was measured in one adoption in a government agency recently that adopted Holacracy, and they measured before Holacracy and after 6 months of Holacracy, how many meeting minutes did it take for someone to get a clear action or clear decision from someone else when they needed it? And the reduction was over 90%. It was over 90% reduction in meeting minutes needed to get to a clear action or clear decision from someone else.
So that's a statistic sells itself, right? Like, hey, you know, want to get more out of your meetings? Let's go to that. But now let's talk about the other side, Brian. So, you know, there's the most public adoptions or attempted adoptions, right? Adoptions in progress of Holacracy have been Zappos. And I think Medium was the other one that off the top of my head, right? And there's been plenty of articles written. I know Amy Groh had a book that she read. I actually read that right after this so I can get like the balance to figure out, okay, how do I want to ask about this? And I'm just curious to see your thoughts, right? Because granted, neither one of us are in their building, right? Going through it. And on its surface, the entire pattern language makes sense to me. It's very, very, very egalitarian, which is what we want to get to, right? Because it eschews typical corporate structure and wording and all that sort of stuff and gets everybody on a level playing field. And yet there honestly has been some public struggle. So, and that could be also just the alien beholder, right? It comes down to everybody's frame and how they're looking at things. So what are your takes on that whole thing, Brian? Because like we talked about, people are messy, right? So there is an angle that, you know, we'll get to in a minute. Like maybe just some people aren't the right fit, but what have been your thoughts so far?
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I see a lot of very, very real challenges and struggles for a lot. We support a lot of companies going through this journey. We have a team of coaches. I hear all the time about the challenges and struggles, and there's so many. And then there's the ones you read about in the press, and the two lists actually look almost nothing alike. I find fascinating that the press seems to be in its own little kind of echo chamber. You mentioned Amy Groth, the reporter.
Yeah.
Interesting example with her. She wrote a very negative article about Holacracy. And we actually called her after that and said, come to one of our trainings. We'd like to chance to change your mind. And she did. She did a 5-day Holacracy training with us. After that, she came up to me and said, oh my God, I was wrong. And she wrote a new article about that was positive. Ironically, the negative first article got spread, got picked up by all these other journalists and got reported on. The positive one that she wrote to correct it, no spread at all.
Yep. It's Brandolini's law, basically. When you say the bullshit asymmetry principle, it's much easier to make a statement that is negative and condescending. But when you actually make the other one, it takes an exponential amount of effort to get it out the
door. Exactly. So a lot of what you read in the press, I'd say be extremely skeptical of. Most of it does not bear much resemblance to the reality that coaches see on the ground. That said, that's not to say there's no struggles. There's plenty. So, just to sum them all up, I'd say Holacracy is an incredibly sophisticated change, right? You're changing the way power works in your company. You're changing the entire expectation structure. You're changing the way people lead and follow. Early days of Agile, I thought Agile transformations, which I was involved in several, were a massive, difficult change, the paradigm difference. This change makes the Agile transformation look easy, and it's not easy, right? This is deeper. It's operating at a deeper level than an Agile method, right? You're changing the fundamental power structure of the company in a really deep way in all aspects. It's huge. It's a multi-year, difficult change. That's not to say you don't get positive ROI much quicker. You do. Your meetings get better in 6 months. You'll have transformatively better meetings if you do it well. But man, the challenges go. And it's you're changing people's sense of identity. If you have people that have gotten their sense of self-worth as a manager from the number of people that they manage, their reports, that changes. People on the front line have it no less easier. They're often used to deferring their power either to the boss or to the group, getting buy-in and consensus. This calls them into their own leadership in a way that can be incredibly difficult and challenging. It shines a light on stuff and reveals so much shadow, individual and organizational.
And you have biology you're going up against, right? So I read Amy's book, I read your book, I did my Googling, and then I took a step back and I thought about like some of the stuff I've read around, you know, behavioral psychology and that sort of thing. And you're also fighting people's inherent biology, right? Like as humans, we like structure. We like the idea of a food chain, right? We love that idea. You know, Yuval Harari went into it in Sapiens, a great detail where some people just want to be told what to do. right? So maybe that's, those are the people who I can see infinitely struggling with the idea of, what do you mean I have to self-identify in what I want to do and how it's going to work, all that sort of stuff. I thought about the Lucifer Principle, right, by Howard Bloom, where he talks about the whole idea of a pecking order, where sometimes it just feels natural to have, that's the alpha, there's the beta, I'm the gamma, and there's a delta behind me. That whole idea, and you know, taking a full circle back to the beginning of the conversation, spiral dynamics, right? There are different people who are at different levels. Yes. So to try and bring them all in and say, hey, we're going to go, and it's you're right, there is a lot of allegory towards agile transformations, in the sense of, we're going to start making this change and you're going to be very uncomfortable. It's going to put you in a place that you're not used to. It's going to make you operate in a way that is completely foreign. And we are going to take this journey together. And the more I read, the more I could see, I can see why there would be, you know, there's always that stick in the mud, which you can, you know, wash that person away. But then there's just, some people just aren't ready. They're just not ready. And, you know, the way Tony Hsieh approached it, where he said, you know, if you're not down for this journey, take a bonus and leave. I mean, I think of some of the agile transformations I've been through, successful and or otherwise. I think we all could have benefited from saying, hey, look, we're going this way. If you don't want in, no harm, no foul. We'll part ways, and we wish you the best of luck on your journey. And I think that was, you know, at first people were like, oh, that's insane. He's going to give people money to quit. And I thought to myself, as a guy who does org change, well, no, that actually makes perfect sense, because otherwise the people there, if you know the Cantor 4 player model, right, they're the silent detractors. Yep. And honestly, no offense, but some of these people end up almost cancerous, right? Oh, because yeah, they start spreading bad ideas, bad news behind the scenes. Yeah. And that, in that whole formal and informal network, that informal network is way more powerful than the formal network. And all it takes is one sentence and you're off to the races.
Exactly. I actually think it was a pretty brilliant move on Zappos' part when they offered, it was an average of 6 months of pay for anyone who just opted out, right? And I think they had 18% of their staff accept that. This is one of the cases where the press, I think, totally missed it. Their story was, you know, 18% mass exodus over Holacracy, which was, they often didn't mention the huge buyout, but Zappos is a call center. The average annual turnover of a call center in the US is about 70%.
Yeah. Right? So yeah, I worked in one. It's crazy.
Yeah. The story there was a call center in the US offers 6 months of pay to walk away, no questions asked, and only 18% took it. Right. That was,
yeah, you're right.
Story. You know, but that's not to say, I mean, it is hard, and some people aren't going to want to sign up for this. But there's some misconceptions that I think are useful to hit. I know often when people hear there's no management hierarchy and no managers in this, they assume there's no structure. And the opposite is true.
Right.
Companies running with Holacracy have more structure, not less. They just get to the structure differently. There's a more collaborative process to get to clear structure. And the other one is that everything's flat and decisions are all going to be made by groups or by consensus, or everyone has an equal say. And that's also not true, right? It's about clarifying what roles you need, getting the right people into the roles. So, you know, I don't want my, you know, junior software developer right out of college choosing massive architectural decisions in my project, right? So we still have an architect role and a developer role, and architect role has certain decision-making authority the developer role doesn't have. So you can still have these almost micro hierarchies in a way, but that doesn't give the architect the ability to boss around the developer. It doesn't give me, the founder, the ability to tell the architect what decision to make. It's distributed. I have no more authority to tell the architect what platform to use or the developer how to code something than they have the authority to tell me anything in my roles, right? It's distributed authority. And it's not flat, everyone has the same voice authority. We all have a voice in the governance process to get to the structure, and then we get to lead our pieces.
And this idea of distributed authority, right? Lowering the decision-making floor is something that, you know, Dan Mezick, a big fan, he's been talking about for ages. Jürgen Appelo talks about it with Management 3.0. And one of the other things that I recently read that popped in my mind was Jeff Anderson just did a book on Chris Anderson. No, Jeff. Chris is the guy from Wired Mag. Jeez, I always get those two confused. Jeff did a book about agile organizational design, where he talked about how, don't look at it as a pyramid. Look at it as a flat concentric circles with rings. And the rings that are furthest to the edges, that are closest to the customers, the ones that make more decisions customer facing, because innovation happens at the edges. They're closer to it. Whereas you get closer, it's almost like, if I had to put it into like Holacracy terms, like the governance piece is the more central piece. And it truly is like the hierarchy isn't a pyramid, it's an inverted pyramid, right? Where the CEO is literally sitting at the bottom. saying, I'm empowering all of you to go do what you do. And then that idea of empowerment spills itself outwards.
Yeah, Holacracy takes that even a step further, right? And really totally decentralizes it. So it's fascinating. It's awesome watching in a company when they really start getting this, where your newest hire can turn to the former CEO, the title doesn't mean much after this, and say, thanks for your input, but I'm going to go in a different direction. I can't tell you how many times as a former CEO in a management hierarchy, I heard somebody more novice turn to me and say, thanks for your input, I'm going to go in a different direction, right? Like they don't do that. They take input as command. And in right. Holacracy, it turns that on its head. Everyone knows that it's their role to lead their peers.
Right, right. And the leading from the outside in, right? Leading from the edges that face the customer inwards, which, and you're right. Like, you know, you make the remark about Zappos, you're completely on point. We said people forget for most part, we're talking about a call center, right? We're not talking about a 30,000 person software development arm. We're talking about a call center. Yep. So this is, you know, most of us that have worked in the corporate world, right? Like, okay, here's the new org change thing. We're going to do this. But to someone in a call center who doesn't necessarily even need to know about this, it's quite daunting, right? Mentally, it's got to be a lot to take in. I mean, I'm very curious to be like, you know, like if I tried to explain it to my wife, she does mortgages. If I try to explain her, like, let alone half the stuff I do, let alone this, I think she'd be like, okay, just give me the 6 months, I'm out. So that makes sense. You're right. We all need to remember, I hate to say it, but the same thing happens with political discourse in this country, right? You have to remember every remark that's made is coming from a frame. It's someone's POV, and you need to step back and look at that POV, and that ties into what's actually said.
Yeah, and the thing about Holacracy ultimately, or any, I think, massive change like this, if you want to get to the deep paradigm change, which ultimately I think is the long-term sustainability, the best path is rarely to try to change people's mindsets. The best path is to help them behave differently, right? I think this is generally something I found again and again with change. It seems more intuitive to try to change mindsets and hope behavior follows, but it actually works better to try to change behavior and hope mindset follows. And that's when we coach a company through this transition, and Holacracy lends itself to this, that's the approach. It's put in place new processes, new framework, new methodology that embodies the principles, helps people behave according to them. And eventually, even people that are in a call center that really aren't interested in organizational design, as they start doing differently, it starts shifting something, right? They start getting more curious about the why behind it. It starts opening them to new experiences. And I see so many deep transformative leaps. I had one woman in Zappos came up to me after a handful of months there, and she said, oh my God, I finally got it. I said, what? And she said, I got what my therapist has been trying to teach me for the past 2 years. And she said, I wasn't getting it in therapy. And she went on to explain it was about how she related with her life partner. And it was about not being codependent, but at the same time, owning and her power in the relationship, collaborating with him in a way. She had a whole story around it, but it was fascinating to me that 2 years of therapy, she wasn't getting it. A few months of doing Holacracy in an organization, and
the light bulb went off.
Because we went in and told her anything. Her therapist had been telling her plenty. It's because we helped her behave differently that opened her to seeing new things.
And your remark about, you know, let's change the behavior, let's change the process, and then eventually we influence not only the culture and the individual personal behavior, right? I mean, mindset, right? This goes back to the integral stuff, right? Where even Lulu talked about how if you want to change your culture, the first thing you do is you change your system, you change how people behave, and you start working to change the mindset, and the culture will come in behind that. The delicate balance is when you start poking at one, you're unbalancing the other. So you really have to have a very, I wouldn't say steady hand, but I think you need to have a very, very systemic thinking, holistic view of it to see when I'm pushing very hard on the behavior piece, what's happening in the culture piece, because I'm going to have to try and right that ship.
And you might need to pay some attention to that and have some interventions on that side as well. That's one of our learnings. One of the many things that can go wrong with this is you focus too much on the structure without a balancing, helping the individuals and the culture. And that can actually sabotage the change in the processes and the structural power structure shift. So you really do need to attend to the whole system. And it's a delicate art adopting this. It's one of the first things I can imagine.
Most organizational changes, this is definitely up there with one of those that I could see. Okay, this is great, but okay, now I know I'd have to, this person would drive me nuts, this person would drive me nuts, this person would drive me nuts. So let me ask you this, Brian, getting us close to wrapping us up. What's next for Holacracy?
Yeah, so I love this. We version control Holacracy, just like open source software. And we actually have a written code for what does Holacracy mean. It's Holacracy is a constitutional power structure. So there is a constitution, the Holacracy constitution, and it's an open source document. It's used by the thousands of companies now doing Holacracy. They adopt this constitution as their power structure. And that constitution has a whole community development process, just like open source software, right? And we've released now a beta of the next version. It's version 5.0 that is coming out in the next couple of months or so. And so Holacracy itself keeps evolving, and it evolves based on the real grounded feedback from those organizations and people doing this in the world, right? They feed back the edge cases, the things quite work as gracefully as they should, or where the rules get in the way and we need to remove a rule or whatever. So that whole process, we have about 100 different concrete cases that have driven this next evolution that we're about to release. And I think that will continue, right? This is not a static thing. This is version 5.0 is, five major versions before, or four major versions before, and plenty of other revisions. So the whole methodology itself keeps evolving as well. And I find that delightful. I don't know many frameworks, many methodologies that themselves really keep evolving. And this one really, really does.
You're right. There's window dressing and tweaks, and then there's substantive change, which it sounds like you are consistently looking in the mirror and facing it inward. The magnifying glass gets turned right inward. And that's where, and you, like you said earlier in the conversation, you know, you eat your own dog food, right? This is how you're running your own organization. So if you might catch things that, oh shit, I didn't think about that when we wrote that down, but now let's think about that next, because that could be something that maybe trips somebody else up.
Yeah, a ton of the learnings we've had from Zappos and many others now are integrated in this version. And I think we've addressed some of the biggest challenges that people run into with Holacracy with this next one. So I'm
awesome. Awesome. So Brian, if our users want to find out more, they want to follow you, they want to get more information, they want to see where the tide is going. Obviously, we're going to link to the book on Amazon in the show notes. Where should users go to find you?
Best bet is to start at the website, holacracy.org. People misspell it all the time, though. It's spelled H-O-L-A, not O, H-O-L-A-C-R-A-C-Y.org. If you go there, there's all sorts of free resources, a blog, videos. But you can also find links to online workshops. There's everything from free introductory events just to get a little bit more taste of it. There's paid online trainings now. There's hopefully in-person trainings coming soon. There's, if you want a coach, there's a network of coaches. You can contact us through the website. We'll put you in touch with a coach that meets your goals or local or whatever. We have them all over the world now. So lots of ways to learn more or connect with it through that website as a starting point.
Awesome. I will definitely make sure I put that in the show notes. So, we've had a great conversation. I got to admit to the listeners, Brian's the first person I've interviewed who keeps up for me word for word space, pacing wise. So we probably could have went another hour and really blown people's ears out just going at warp speed. So once again, Brian, I want to thank you for joining us. On behalf of Brian and myself, I want to thank all of you listeners. If you enjoyed what you heard, please give us a review, a rating, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher. I think we're on Audible or everywhere, your podcast platform of choice. If you enjoyed what you heard and you want to get into the conversation, we have a very vibrant Discord server with an international footprint. I was just talking with someone this morning from Spain. So if you want to get in the call and talk more about Holacracy, find us on the Discord server. We have plenty to talk about there. And lastly, but not least, we are dedicated, the Agile Uprising is dedicated to making our show free. We are always going to be free. However, if you like what you hear and you want to throw us a couple bucks, you're interested, we do have a Patreon out there. I'll throw that link in the show notes. You will get a surprise in the mail from yours truly. So you never know. Once again, I want to thank Brian for his time, for coming in and speaking with us about Holacracy. It was a very eye-opening conversation for me. I hope that goes for the listeners. And until next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast signing out.
Thanks, Jay.